So first off, this information, how was it exposed exactly by the team of researchers without the use of patients' ID numbers or their full names? How was the information actually able to be gleaned?
Okay, well, first of all, the data itself was published on the web at the government's open data portal in the belief that it had been de-identified. So they published the data deliberately. They didn't realise that individual patients could be re-identified based on other things about them. And the answer to the question of how it was possible to link a patient identity with their record is that, unfortunately, it was just a simple matter of learning some details about the patient's medical history, such as when they had a baby or when they had a particular surgery or a particular medical issue, and then just querying the database to find out how many people who were born in the same year had the same issues at the same time. And you'd be surprised how little information it takes to make you unique.
Okay, so it does take a little bit of research. It's not sort of you type in the right sort of set of numbers and it exposes exactly who this person was. It did take a little bit of research to figure out the matching of the medical histories.
Right, you need to know a little bit about the person.
So how was patients' well-being affected? What's the likelihood of patients' well-being actually being affected with this kind of information being put out there accidentally?
Well, it's hard to talk about likelihood, and the department said that they weren't aware of any re-identifications other than ours, which is true, neither are we. But the issue, of course, is that this kind of thing would be under the radar if it happened at all. So if other nasty If somebody else with malevolent intentions had used this database and re-identified patients, we wouldn't necessarily be hearing about it. And the possible implications, the possible reasons that somebody nasty might do that kind of thing range from extortion or deliberate really nasty behaviour towards a particular individual all the way through to just much more mundane uses of data to discriminate against people, to affect their credit rating, to input into the kind of fancy analytics engines that select people for employment or other processes. There are a lot of ways that inappropriately transferred information about a person's health might negatively affect that person.
I mean, for example, we are talking, of course, about some records pertaining to HIV medication, and we know that there can be a kind of bias against people who have HIV in day-to-day society.
That's absolutely right. So the data in the billing records it doesn't have any doctor's notes or any results of tests or anything, but it does have some very specific item codes for both MBS and PBS. So HIV medication is one obvious aspect, and there are medications that are specifically for patients with HIV. So if you've re-identified a person's record, you can see those prescriptions and you can infer that the patient has that issue. There are other stigmatized illnesses. Visits to a psychiatrist are pretty obvious. Management of second trimester labor is pretty obvious. So the things that a person might be discriminated against for are in some cases quite obvious in this data set.
And for the patients that were at this risk of being exposed, being revealed as having these particular records, was there actually follow-up or will there be follow-up for patients who may have been at risk of being identified?
So 10% of the population were in the data set that was published. That's 10% of the overall Australian population.
That is probably a lot of people to follow up with.
That would be a lot of people to follow up with, yes. And the assumption would have to be that pretty much everyone who was in the data set is fairly easily re-identifiable given a small number of points of information about them. Not absolutely everybody. There are some people who hardly ever go to the GP. But most ordinary people, if they've had some number of MBS or PBS bills, if you know what those bills are, they're fairly likely to make that person unique. So it is something that does affect probably most of the people whose data was published.
And just finally, obviously, something like this comes out. It is a fair concern for anybody who might be thinking of going to visit a psychiatrist or a GP for more issues that might have a stigma attached to them or might be a little bit embarrassing. going forward, how will the government actually ensure the protection of people's privacy? How will they ensure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, good question. I think you have to ask them, not me. But I think that the really important issue is to think about these kinds of problems as engineering problems. I think they are, cybersecurity problems are mathematical and engineering problems. They can be solved if we're transparent about them, if people are honest about the algorithmic details. I think that the government's effort to outlaw re-identification was a misguided approach because I think they confused the symptom with the disease. And I think the law, which Attorney General George Brandis attempted to introduce, that would have made this kind of investigation a crime, is exactly the wrong way to go. I think we should have a lot more investigation into the mathematical details of how to protect privacy, and we should be working very actively to develop Australian skills in this area, because these problems can really only be addressed by thinking carefully through the maths.
Well, Vanessa, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your insight into this one this morning.
Thanks, Sean. Good to talk to you.